Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we resume our ongoing conversation with OSU President Gordon Gee, now in the sixth year of his second term at the helm of OSU. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. Gosh, that makes me feel a little old. You know, I was here 7 years before, nearly ruined the university, I had to leave. Now I hope that the seven-year locust doesn't return.
Well, so. I was going to ask you about that.
Right.
But first, listeners, if you have a question or comment for Gordon Gee, you're welcome to join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can always go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. So, you know, it is a good time to ask you how you're doing in general in the biz of running a major, you know, Big Ten university and what you're setting your sights on next.
Well, you know, obviously we've got a lot of goals at the university, and I think this last 5 years we've built a great platform. Our institution has great momentum academically. We're viewed as one of the really hot institutions in this country. We're one of the most financially stable despite all of the issues that are going on. And we have just great horizons in front of us. And I'm really looking forward to that. At the same time, you know, you asked me the question off the air, and I'll just answer
all right.
That. And that is, you know, do I ever think about retirement? The answer is no. I do know that at some point I have to leave this job. It's a 24/7 job, and I love it too much. By that, I mean I don't have any balance in my life. I work very hard on it. Every year, it's the first of the year, so I do the New Year's resolution, have balance in your life, take more time, and so forth.
And that lasts
for about a week. And then I'm off and running again. And I'm very intense, as you know. In fact, we were joking off the air again about how intense I am. Well, saying all those things, but institutions need to be refreshed, and university presidents need to be refreshed, and I need to be refreshed at some time. But it's a good while down the line. But I will not retire. I will do something meaningful. Hopefully in a way to contribute when that time comes, but I also know when that time comes.
We usually get a call from somebody, and I'll just get right to it,
sure.
that is upset, concerned that their child who has a 4.2 coming out of high school, did a 28 on the ACT, on every club in the world, you know, 4-year letter in varsity sports, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Why they didn't get on the main campus. And, there are a lot of smart kids that don't get on the campus. And I was wondering, and people say, well, it's a land-grant university. Isn't this a university for all? How do you...
Well, we're not a Red Cross. We're a great university. And one of the things that I did during my first tenure that I'm most proud of, and that is the fact that we raised the academic standards at the institution, which meant that what we're about now is educating kids, not providing ways for kids to relearn what they should have learned in high school or other things, and also obviously working with the public schools. But I think that's a great question. We are one university, and I make this point all the time. We happen to have six front doors to the institution. Our campus at Marion, our campus at Mansfield, our campus at Newark, our campus at Lima are equally capable of providing fabulous education, Ohio State education, and many times students will go there. And by the way, many students are now finding that it would be a first choice way in order to be able to acclimate themselves, to be able to find a smaller environment, a good educational experience, and then move on to the larger campus if they want to. But we are one university, and so if someone says, well, my child didn't get into the main campus, so therefore they were rejected from the university, wrong. We provide opportunities for every Ohioan to be able to have an Ohio State education. It may not be exactly the way parents want to have that happen. And you know, I'm very sympathetic to that. I'm the father of a daughter. I now have two twin, 2-month-old grandchildren, so I'm already starting to think about identical twin girls, Elizabeth
wow.
and Ava, and they're just fabulous young ladies. And they've already stolen my heart and all my money, too, I might know. But anyway, I understand that, and I'm very sympathetic to it. But we, unlike a lot of institutions, you know, when I was at Brown and at Vanderbilt, we had a 6, 7, 8% admission rate. And then if a kid didn't get in, you said sayonara. Here, as a great public university, we believe in Ohioans and an opportunity for Ohioans to work with us. And by the way, we have great collaborative relationships with our community colleges across the state. They are our partners. So the educational issue and attainment for us as a university is very important for the people of Ohio.
Do you think differently about higher ed now than you did when you first got into the business? Is it fundamentally changed?
Oh, yes, and I fundamentally changed. You know, I was a traditional kind of an academic viewing the world through a very traditional lens. I now really believe that the world has changed. The world's upside down. Universities have an extraordinary leadership role to play. I believe this institution more than any in this country, probably so, because of the particular responsibility and calling we have as the largest land grant, as the largest, most comprehensive university sitting in Ohio, the beloved institution of a great state. We have responsibilities beyond anything that I've ever seen or felt. And saying that, yes, the world has changed. One of the things we're dealing with right now is all of the issue regarding MOOCs and online education and the question.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Some of my faculty colleagues asked me, well, gee, you know, are we becoming irrelevant? And my point is that we're going to remain very relevant because we're going to make ourselves relevant. One of the reasons, for example, that we're moving to more on-campus housing and more of a student experience rather than just a place in which students come and get an education, but it's where they get an education in the totality as citizens of the institution, citizens of the state, is in order to make certain that there is still, when it comes to the issue of delivering an educational experience, that a great university provides an education that you cannot find in an online course. That doesn't mean to say those aren't important. The hybrid approach is very important. We are starting OSU online. We're going to be very aggressive in this area, and we want to make our world-class faculty available to everyone. We want to do it in a way that continues the qualities of a great university, which is an intellectual community. And online education does not create an intellectual community.
Growth rates in online learning, sure, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know. It's reaching 20% now,
right.
And the Chronicle for Higher Education has reported that it's the fastest-growing segment of the higher education population, in large part due to the growing number of older, non-traditional
right.
students who can't do the
we're place-bound.
And it's a demographic that right. will increase along with the aging baby boom generation, the retraining of the national workforce as people have to go back to school. How do you think this trend fits with the mission of Ohio State University?
Well, I think it fits directly with us. You know, it's education, education for citizenship. That's our motto, by the way, and that's precisely what it should
know
be.
That.
And what we need to do is we need to think about education as no longer K through 12 and then undergraduate education for 18, 19, 20-year-olds and then graduate school for 25-somethings and then on to the workforce. It is K through life and now pre-K through life, and the university needs to be a participant from PK through life in terms of that educational experience. And that's one of the reasons that the new technology is going to be very, very, I think, enhancing for us. And it plays right into our role in leading the educational attainment of people in the state and beyond.
Do you envision, and if so, how do you envision competing for what we consider non-traditional students today, but which in time will become more of the norm?
Well, you know, I make a point which I think is true. If one take a look at both the statistics and the demographics, the so-called traditional students, the 18 to 22-year-olds, are no longer the traditional students. The traditional students are increasingly the 30-year-old mother who has divorced and wants to get an engineering degree, or the 35-year-old man who has lost his job and who wants to retrain himself to become a teacher or other things. And that's good. I mean, you know, if we think about it in a broad way, the way we're going to compete as a nation in a shark-infested world is we're going to compete on our ability to be able to outthink. And thinking requires education. Thinking requires great universities. Thinking requires great research. Thinking requires access by everyone into that kind of an opportunity. And so the world has changed, and we're just going to move with it. I want to make certain we're proactive, not reactive. I also want to make certain we don't get too far out in front of ourselves. I use the example. Sorry about that.
I'm not editing you.
I know how it is. You're editing me here today. She raises her eyebrows, kicks me out the door. But anyway, I think of this as an example. A lot of institutions got very enamored by building campuses overseas. You know, we built a campus in Dubai. We built a campus in and wherever. And I, first of all, I thought that was cultural imperialism. When I returned, we really thought about it very carefully. We have a wonderful leader of our international programs, and he thought about it. And what we've done is we've established these embassies, I call them, you know, these gateways, one in Shanghai, one in Mumbai, soon to be in Sao Paulo, soon to be in Istanbul. What we do is we connect the university to living institutions, to living governments, to living businesses, and that way then we become a participant internationally without becoming an imperialist. And I think that that is that kind of thing. So we were a little late on the front end. Now I think we are a leader on the back end, and that's what I say. We want to be proactive, not reactive, and we don't want to be too quick to judgment.
You know, when it comes to that kind of an issue and that kind of a change, the university or higher education, particularly the big, you know, the big tuna boats like OSU, are not traditionally very good about change. In other words, someone embarked on the universities overseas or the branches overseas, and how hard is it to turn the ship around and say, yeah, it's going to redo that. We're not going to do that. We're going to admit that wasn't the way we wanted to go.
I get asked that question all the time. You know, the truth of the matter is that I have found Ohio State, and I know people will raise their eyebrows and wonder if I've been drinking something here today, but the truth of the matter is I have been really pleasantly surprised upon my return how open people are to change and willingness to really think about it. Frankly, I found the smaller institutions, the smaller private institutions, I joke about the fact that at Brown, which is a wonderful institution, one of the great Ivy League institutions, that I talked a little bit about change, and there was not a great deal of sympathy to that. Here, I think that because of the nature of the public institution we are, because of the traditions we have, because of the thought process we go through, change is an imperative. Now, we're not fast to change as I would like. You know, I wake up in the morning and say, why aren't we doing this? And I want it done by, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And fortunately, we have more skilled people than I and more mature people who say, wait just a second, we need to think this thing through. And I just went through this conversation a few minutes ago, and they reminded me of a few bumps in the road that we need to think about. But that saying that, I think that we are in a change mood, and I think that there's realization about that. There have been so many things that happened. I mean, our move to semesters was a big deal.
I'm going to ask you about
that. It was a significant change in culture of this institution. We're still processing that. Our consolidation of our College of Arts and Science, we're one of the few institutions in the country that really went from, really had four or five colleges and reconsolidated them in a way. Great tribute to our Executive Vice President, Joe Steinmetz, soon to become our Provost. And so there's so many things that are happening that are really processes of mammoth change in organizations like Ohio State. So I'm proud about that. Is change fast enough for me? No. Do we need to pick up the pace? Yes. Do we need to have speed to action? All of those kinds of things, absolutely. But saying that, I think that there's an openness unlike many places that I have seen and many places that are now existing. I think those institutions that are not willing to really fundamentally talk about change and make those right decisions are the threatened institutions in this country.
For the benefit of the folks watching and listening online and also watching on television, because they do so around the state, can you tell us about those fancy suspenders describe them in your own words.
I have over 1,000 active bow ties and 1,000.
But I think people make a big deal about the bow ties. They forget your socks and your suspenders.
Yeah,
often,
you know, my socks. I'm really actually kind of a little subtle with my socks. I do have on Argyle socks, but a little subtle. Oh, today I've got suspenders that have dollar bills all up and down them, and
depictions of dollar bills.
Depictions of dollar. Yeah, they're not dollar bills actually. Depictions of dollar bill. Just a reminder that I need to keep up the pace in terms of making certain that we financially make this a powerful institution for our faculty, our staff, our students.
My guest is OSU President Gordon Gee. If you have a question or comment, we welcome them, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll get to a couple calls when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, are online dating services undermining American monogamy? Is it too easy to click and play? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR News station. And it's 40 degrees with cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. Expect showers this morning and then some sunshine this afternoon, a high of 46. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 28 degrees. Mostly sunny for Thursday with a slight chance of showers in the afternoon, a high near 50. More rain Thursday night and a low of 41 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Gordon Gee. He's president of Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's always easy to post your question or comment on Facebook as well. And you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. I'm going to go to Dave first and then James. Hi, Dave. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much. Dr. Gee, I'm pleased to speak with you.
Hey, Dave. Thank you for calling in.
Yes. I heard you mentioning the business about trying to avoid cultural imperialism by developing embassies abroad. And I was just going to say, that sounds like it would probably be more cost-effective than keeping a campus, too. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You know, a number of these institutions have started these campuses overseas, and then they have had to shut them down. They have not been they've been very, very costly, and they haven't been very successful. First of all, you know, we have these, our embassy in our gateway, our embassy in Shanghai, I think, has three people. Our gateway in Mumbai now has two people. Well, you know, we're going to keep them very, very small. One of the things we're also doing, which interesting, Alex Fisher of the Columbus Partnership and I were just talking today, we want to make certain that these are also very much open doors for Ohio and for Ohio business and for Ohio in a number of different ways. And so we were just talking today, how do we make certain that when we have trade missions, a variety of other things, that the university is front in line and being very, very supportive of that, so that we use all of the resources of the state and the university can be a prime leader in that regard.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
James from Columbus, you're on the air with Gordon Gee. Welcome.
Hi, yes, thank you. How are you doing today, Dr. Gee?
Hey, how are you doing, James?
I'm fine. I thank you for taking the time out today, this morning. I would like to say earlier about your comments about the university. I'm originally from Mansfield, and the Mansfield University, Ohio State University campus is a good campus. But the comment that I wanted to make was about our football team this year. How impressed were you with the work Urban Meyer has done, and what do you expect from us next year?
Well, I'm going to say three things. One is I can assure you, we'd be in deep trouble if I coached, my friend. But I told Coach Meyer one day that the most intense person I've ever met in my life is me until I met him. He's a very impressive man, very focused on Ohio State, and by that, it's just not simply football. He's a very focused guy, loves it here. You know, from Ashtabula, his wife's from Ross County. I think they've found their place. And think about this. Last year at this time, we were viewed as a fading place, a fading power, and then we turn around and have a 12-0 season. Of course, I believe we won the national championship. I really do. I think that, but for the fact that we were not in a bowl game, we're the only undefeated team in the country. But more importantly, I love the spirit that he's brought to the place, and I love the I love the commitment he's brought to being really Ohio-centric in his ability to be able to make certain that this our football team does a great job in representing the best interests of Ohio and Ohio State. So wonderful, wonderful, wonderful addition to the university. And by the way, you asked me how we're going to do it. You know, I don't predict football games. I don't make those kind of predictions because every time I do, I get in trouble and it becomes a fodder for the other coaches and so forth. So I've learned to both tape my ankles and tape my mouth, James.
Okay. I can understand that, and yeah. I appreciate you being so honest with me this morning. I appreciate the time.
Great. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, James.
You too.
Bye
now. All right.
You know, speaking of football and so forth, the head of the NCAA now supports a stipend for athletes to cover costs beyond tuition, books, and fees, and both coaches. In Monday's BCS championship between number one Notre Dame and number two Alabama spoke in support of the idea as well. So the question is no longer for a lot of people whether to cut athletes a check. It's how to do it. And I was wondering, what do you make of that, if you agree, and how would you like to see it work?
I've been a strong supporter of that for a long time. The point is the fact that this is all about scholarships. And you know, and we ask these student-athletes to spend enormous amounts of their time, so therefore, and by rules, by regulation, by a variety of other things, they can't go out and do what some other students can do,
right,
and work study, a variety of other things. We need to make certain that we're treating them fairly. This is not about paying athletes. This is about fairness. And I've been very disappointed that the NCAA has not been able to get through the $2,000 additional stipend. Mark Emmert, as I reminded you last time, worked for me for 5 years. He sat in an office next to me, who's the president of the NCAA. So I have great sympathy for what he's trying to do in terms of changing that culture. But we need to do that. We need to modernize ourselves. You know, the problem with the NCAA is the fact that its rule book is thicker than the IRS code. And there's a lot of nonsense in it that needs to be dealt with. He's trying to do that, but it also is an institution that represents 4,500 colleges and universities, and so therefore you have the big public universities, you have the big private institutions, and then you have Division II and III, and these are all wonderful
institutions. And the big time college athletics is mostly Big Ten or the big time college football.
Well, it's
the
five or six major conferences, right? And I mean that's where the problems are, that's where the challenges are, and that's where the opportunities are. And so how we develop a strategy so that one size doesn't fit all is going to be the next challenge for the NCAA, I believe.
Do you have any you don't like to predict games, but you mentioned that the pace at which they move.
How fast are we going to move? Well, you know, I mean, I was on the first, I actually chaired the first presidential commission in 1988, which was the Reform Commission, when I was at the University of Colorado, and it's taken about 20 years to get to the point of adopting the recommendations that we made then. So it's slow. It needs to pick up the pace. I think this is the way that it is, Anne, in every facet of our life. You know, we now tweet, we now Facebook, we now have instantaneous ability to be able to communicate. We're sort of an instant gratification society. That means that we need to be very fast forward in our thinking, our ability to be able to manage change. Otherwise, change will manage us. I make a point internally all the time that we'll either be the architects of change or we'll be victimized by change, and I intend on us being the architects of that change.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. A letter to the editor in the Columbus Dispatch today expressed concern about how OSU handled the case of Professor Elton in the College of Pharmacy. The University and Office of Research Integrity ultimately found that Professor Elton had falsified data in six journal articles published between 2004 and 2010, but that he will keep his job, his $130,000-plus annual pay, and continue teaching. And the letter to the editor questioned whether that's the kind of person you want in charge of the education of young minds.
Let me just say that, and I can't comment about the specific case.
True.
Universities are places that we don't make snap judgments, but I also think our judgment needs to be swift and clear. And I frankly have asked, because there's been new evidence on this, the provost to make certain that we take a look at this. Without commenting on the case, I believe universities need to be very clear about their moral equivalencies, and that is this, that when someone does something that violates the integrity of the institution, does not establish our moral standards, does not establish our standards in terms of teaching and research and in terms of our ability to be able to work with our students, then we need to make the kind of changes, either in terms of the person or in terms of our rules and regulations that allows that to happen. And so I am very clear about that. I do not want to tolerate or have rules that allow us to tolerate misbehavior. Now, saying this also, we've hired a new chief compliance officer. Many of these things that have sometimes occurred slipped through the cracks, if you will, and I hate to use that word, but large institutions do have a lot of moving parts. Many of those issues will be addressed very early and often. I think that that will cut down on any of these kinds of problems.
We have an email from Joseph. He writes, OSU is the 100-pound gorilla when it comes to the future of the wider university district. What are the future development plans for the campus specifically? How will future plans impact North High Street?
You know, I first of all, I'm glad he only said 100-pound gorilla, not an 800-pound gorilla.
900-pound, I think, is the usual.
Oh, yeah, or something like that. Saying that, well, the answer is we want to be a great neighbor. I really want to be a great neighbor. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it very, very quickly, and that is the fact that when I came in 1990, we were an awful neighbor. We had sucked the life out of the community. We had not contributed anything. We did not involve ourselves. We created campus partners. We started buying things. We started thinking about how we could become really net contributors. Look at what we've done with Wineland Park. You know, the North Campus area is a very important area for us. When I came in 1990, Clintonville was not a great place. We have is now a place where our young faculty reside, a variety of other things. We have big plans. And on the east of High Street, our intent is to move very aggressively over the next several years. I'll tell you what I'd like. Now, I'm not announcing this, but I'll tell you what I'd like. I'd like for us to have some kind of a laboratory school that would be available for faculty and people who and staff and people who live in the neighborhood so that we have high quality education there. I'd like to create a faculty and staff housing project so that we work with them to finance this kind of housing. We want to make certain that we're building creating new kinds of residence opportunities for our students, and we're doing something almost immediately, which is the fact that we are really hiring our own inspectors to make certain that the quality of the housing that our students and others are in is of the quality that they should be. And so those are the kinds of things that we're doing. And we're investing heavily. We have already invested millions, but we're going to invest very heavily over the next 3 or 4 years. That is a major, major priority of the university.
Speaking of housing, what's the latest on requiring sophomores to live on campus? Are you moving forward with that to begin
forward
next fall?
Is
that
It has to begin when we finish the housing.
Okay.
So we're going to do about $4 million worth of construction on the North Campus area. It's going to be a fabulous addition to the university. Once we have sufficient facilities to house freshmen and sophomores, and the requirement will move. And at the same time, and this goes with the question that was just asked, right, at the same time, we're paralleling that with improving the quality of life and quality of our commitment on the east side of the campus, which is the North High Street and the East Campus area.
I would imagine the pressure by landlords and so forth outside of off campus has not lessened.
No, let me tell you something. We have wonderful landlords.
They think you're taking away their business.
We have wonderful landlords. Those I make this point. I'll make it again. Those people who have treated our students well will be treated very well. Will not only survive but thrive in this environment. Those people who have taken advantage of our students over long periods of time, they should be wary. They should either change their attitude or get out of the business, because we are going to make certain that the quality of life, the safety for our students, the ability for our faculty and staff to live in that neighborhood, that is our goal, that's our priority, and that's the reason we're putting a lot of pressure on people to really upgrade the quality of their efforts. So it's a partnership, but it also is an expectation.
The first 1,000, I think, slots for sophomores to live on campus is going to be sort of a trial period with a limited number, from what I understand.
Well, I mean, we'll glide into it. We'll glide into it.
How do you know if you're going to be one of those sophomores that gets to live on campus?
A number of our sophomores live on campus now. We already have that.
Okay.
And if you're talking about, are we going to try this out and then see whether it works? No. We're going to move toward it. We're building. We're doing that. It's just that the more that we can move freshmen or sophomores on, the faster we'll try to do that. We will not have the absolute requirement until we can say to all of you, we then have space.
What sort of demand demand are you seeing out there for it at this point?
Well, you know, I will tell you this, the data are so compelling. Oh, my gosh, you know, you can get me going about this, but the data are so compelling. The longer they stay on campus, the happier they are, the faster they graduate, the more successful they are, period. I mean, there's the faster they move off, the more likely they are to not have as—
Well, that's what the data show, but do the students and their parents know that?
We work very hard to make sure the students and the parents know that. That this is not father knows best, you know. This is a continuing conversation, absolutely. But saying that, we have tremendous demand for on-campus housing. That's one of the reasons that we are moving to renovate and to build and to rehabilitate. You know, our South Campus projects are just fabulous. I'm going to be out with the students this weekend. I love going to those South Campus projects. They've just changed the whole culture of the way students think about themselves as well as the way that the university is working with them. And you know, as I describe it, this is about the university and the student having a 168-hour-a-week partnership, in which we really do work closely together for their happiness, for our success, and for their success.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Stephen, on the west side of Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to talk to you, Dr. McGee.
Hey, thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you. I have a question for you. That is, do you believe that the campus will go paperless sometime?
We just went paperless in our academic medical center, a $2.5 billion business. The answer is absolutely. I think that the faster we can go paperless. You know, we are very driven by two things, which I think are important. One is that that we're driven by our whole wellness program. We want to be the campus in the country in which wellness is a major priority. Dean Byrne Melnick, who is our dean of nursing, is also our chief wellness officer, and she has all of us working, holding our meetings on treadmills and sitting on balls and a variety of other things. I mean, the whole point is the fact that we want to the quality of life in terms of wellness is very important to us. And the second thing is to be environmentally one of the leading institutions. You know, we just announced an agreement, and we're now at that point where 25% of the electricity that is right here in this building is being provided by wind power. We're one of the largest users of wind power in this country now, and it's just continuing. And then we have been digging all those holes on the south oval and beyond in terms of geothermal. So we are moving very aggressively to become carbon neutral, if not carbon free, and we want to have that be a major goal for the institution. So the answer is paperless, environmental quality, fitness and well-being. Those are all very much a part of our efforts at the institution.
May I ask one more question?
Yes, sir.
So you envision someday that students will be carrying discs around instead of those heavy books?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's what I do right now. You know, I think about the fact that a wonderful book called The Team of Rivals, which, of course, the movie Lincoln was based upon, I carried it all through India, nearly killed myself. Now I have all my books on my iPad, and as I travel, I do a variety of other things. It's just such a much more pleasant way to read. I still love the hardbacks. I buy every book that I read. I also buy the hardback copy because I just like to have— I'm a traditionalist in that regard, but yeah, we're going to move quickly toward the iPad and toward the electronic availability for all this information.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Just on the same score, before we take a break, Carolyn is asking you to share your take on the national student movement to divest university investments from fossil fuel industries.
Well, I mean, that's been something that's been going on for some time, and as with everything, I think that you need to have a balanced approach. We, as an institution, have made a major commitment to the environmental set of issues that I've just talked about. So I don't want to go back through those, but I can tell you that we also want to be prudent in terms of what we're doing with our investments. I'm not, our students very often take a leadership role. They're very attuned. They're very smart. They're very ably situated to be able to impact the institution, but I have not personally had any of them talk to me about that particular issue yet.
My guest is Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. We'll continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
New congressmen and women are settling into their offices on Capitol Hill while President Obama takes advantage of the momentary peace in Washington to announce his new cabinet choices. I'm Ari Shapiro. Political junkie Ken Rudin returns, plus we'll mark what would have been Richard Nixon's 100th birthday. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Wellness Wednesday begins, and we'll talk about the future of healthcare. Join us for Wellness Wednesday from 11 till noon. And it's 40 degrees with some light rain. Expect showers off and on until about noon today. And then partly sunny skies and a high of 46 degrees. Clouds for tonight, a low of 28, mostly sunny with a chance of afternoon showers on Thursday, and a high near 50 degrees. Rain is also likely Thursday night. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, announcing the opening of the Spirit of Women Park, thanks to the generous support of the Ingram family. Located near the Wexner Medical Center, the Spirit of Women Park features thousands of tiles hand-painted by donors to honor special women in their lives. medicalcenter.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Gordon Gee. He's president of The Ohio State University. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513. Mort in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate President Gee's leadership. My question is this. Since the German apprenticeship program is longstanding and is reputed to produce about 1.5 million jobs a year, I was wondering how thoroughly the university and the state have looked into that as being suitable for this country.
You're talking about the country of Germany's apprenticeship program.
Correct.
I'm sorry, I was going to say the German apprenticeship program. I said, oh my gosh, there's something I didn't know about. The answer is that this is interesting. That's a great question. Thank you. And Morton, I really appreciate your call. An unusual question.
Is this kind of like apprenticeship versus internship?
It's internship. Okay. The German system really does have a very, very a very, very structured way for people to get into the workforce. A variety of things that they do are very forward thinking, but they've had them for a long time. Saying that, the answer is that in this state we're looking very much toward that. I have chaired this funding commission for the governor on higher education, and one of the and we also took a look very carefully at that issue in our capital budget process, Mort, and what we really said is that the role of higher education is very much about creating jobs. It's about creating ideas, and it's about creating jobs, and particularly working with our colleagues in the community college and the technical colleges, an ability to be able to create those kinds of internships and or apprenticeships, as you call them, is very much a high priority. It's a high priority for this governor, and it's a high priority in terms of what we're trying to do in higher education, so that we kind of make ourselves rather than into a competition between community colleges and technical schools and universities, that we are really partnering now in ways to make that available. Now, the university itself, obviously, we're very committed to the so-called internship programs and other kind of programs where our students get a good deal of practical opportunity to move into the workforce while they're in school. And I think that that's an important component of the German system also.
Thank you, Mort.
Okay, thank
Take
you.
Take care. You know, building on that idea of the value of an internship or an apprenticeship program in terms of job placement after college, you know, students and their parents more than ever, whoever's footing the bill, that is, are concerned about the cost benefit of college and career. And when you go online to check OSU's job placement numbers, it's easy to find the Fisher College and also Moritz College of Law statistics, but not the larger university.
Yeah.
It's not easy to find. And I was wondering,
we've moved toward a more centralized system. As a matter of fact, we have, it was really collegiate based for a long time, college based, and we've moved to make certain that we have an overall career program and overall placement program for the institution. Our placement numbers when we all amalgamate them are very high. As you know, the Wall Street Journal said this is one of the best places in the country to recruit, and we've been very successful in that regard. And we work very hard at it. I was just meeting with the dean of the dean of our law school, the Moritz College. And he, wonderful guy, wonderful leader, and he's done a terrific thing, and he'll probably get mad at me for talking about this because we don't want everyone else to know, but he's created these corporate fellowship programs because, as you know, the loss of jobs in the legal community has been rather rampant for a period of time, and he's created these programs so after they graduate. Then the university works very closely with a number of our corporate citizens and the university itself to provide opportunities for a year or two for young lawyers to be able to get that kind of experience. And it's been very successful. So we're doing a number of those kinds of things.
You know, most schools, when it comes to those statistics, depend on self-reported figures, mm-hmm. and they use surveys sent out to new alumni. And there are traditionally very poor rates of return. In 2010, more than a third of college and university placement rates were based on responses from no more than half of their graduates. And that's according to the National Association of Colleges and Employers. And then the Collegiate Employment Research Institute at Michigan State notes that this problem is endemic in the higher ed world. And I wonder, what is being done to make sure that the statistics you do have, the reporting you do have, is something that you can really rely on?
That we're not going to inflate, we're not going to use to our advantage. I think that there's a level of honesty. You know, one of the reasons that I dislike these ranking systems so much is the fact that, and it's becoming more and more readily apparent, that people skew it, they lie about it, right? I mean, there have been some very fine institutions that recently have admitted that they have not provided the right kind of data. I mean, that in and of itself is false. Now, I would hope, I would expect, this goes back to the moral imperative that we talked about, that we would never do anything like that. But I also think that it's important for us to get the data so that we know where we're doing well, but also where we're failing. My view about life, my view is a pretty simple one. That is the fact that I learn a heck of a lot more and from my failures and from my mistakes than I do from my successes, and so we need to constantly be taking a look at what we're doing well, but more importantly about what we're not doing well, and those data are very important to us.
Mary in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Dr. D. It's a pleasure to talk
Mary,
to you.
Mary, wonderful to talk to you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. I have a question that has puzzled me. I am an employee at the Wexner Medical Center, and my husband works in the College of Engineering.
Right.
So we drive home from campus every day, and I have always been puzzled by two things. Why doesn't the Schottenstein have some kind of marquee that tells us upcoming events? Because we come home, and we see all these people streaming in there, and we go, wonder what's happening. And not necessarily during sports time. And then the other thing is I'm very perplexed by the poor condition of sidewalks and lighting, particularly around, like, where the alumni places and along the Tangi River Road. And, you know, there were
Longaberger House and Fawcett Center, which is where we're at, Mary.
Longaberger House and the lighting, and there's no sidewalks. And I see people stream across there going to the shot. And I know there have been a few accidents over the years along that area that there's been fatalities. So I know it's not just the university, but what is the city of Columbus and the university doing to try to improve that?
A great question, Mary. First of all, that's a great question about why don't we have a marquee that is there. I actually will write that down. Animal Watch, we write
so
that
when
down.
I complain about the traffic jams, I can know which superstar to
bring. I haven't even thought about that. Thank goodness you called in, Mary. But the second thing is the fact the university has a long-term project in terms of really improving the quality of its roads and its sidewalks. You know, we've done it very well internally. If you work at the medical center, you know that we are doing really remarkable things in terms of all the construction and all of the new sidewalks and everything we're putting over there. If you go into the internal parts of the campus, it's just extraordinary. It's become one of the great signature efforts. Now we're moving to the periphery. One of the things that we want to try to do, I'm very candid, one of the reasons we haven't moved as quickly, is that one of our major projects is to move Cannon Drive. And once we get that moved,
that's at the south side by Lenox Center, right?
That will then provide us an opportunity to be able to make another set of significant improvements. So your note is great. I'm going to write that down. Why don't we have that? I'll call up someone and ask that question, because that's a great thing. It's a marquee opportunity for us to tell a little bit what's going on in the university.
All right. Mary, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Tracy in Lithopolis, you're on the air. Welcome, Tracy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Tracy. Where's Lithopolis?
It's just south of Canal Winchester.
Okay, great. Great, because okay. You and I travel the state so much.
Dr. Gee, I graduated in the spring of 1991, and you're our commencement speaker.
I had my name on your diploma.
Yes, and I actually remember parts of the speech, and I repeat to my own children what not to get pierced or tattooed. I think you gave some great advice. But you know, now moving into having my own kids, and I would love for them also to go to the university. One of the things that really helped my family out was the fact that I did commute from home. At the time, I think my tuition was $800 a quarter. it's been a while.
Well, that just hurts to hear.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I'm looking at now with my own child that will be a freshman here in a couple of years. What is the status now on incoming students? I know, you just spoke a bit about how great it is to be on campus, and I do agree with that. But for students who don't want to accrue as much debt or don't have the financial means, what kind of things can be done for those students? And is there still an opportunity to be on main campus?
Well, boy, I tell you, you've asked me about three or four different questions. I'm going to try to be responsive, because I know that Anne is starting to drum about the fact that we're getting a little bit close to time.
I'm not
First of all, let me thank you for the question. Very thoughtful question. And I'm proud to have my name on your diploma. That was, I don't know if you remember, I'll just tell a quick story. But all the students were complaining the fact that the graduation speaker was just going to be the president of the university instead of the president of the United States. And so we had a great time with that. But it was fun. I remember that very, very well. So saying that, three or four things. First of all, one of the things the university is doing is the same time as it's talking about moving aggressively toward a housing requirement, we're also moving very aggressively toward a student support and student scholarship effort. In other words, the two of those things are going to parallel themselves. So affordability, we hope, will not be an issue, but rather that will be financially very supportive. The second thing is that there's always the ability to be able to apply for whatever reason if someone needs or wants to live at home. The third thing, though, that I would argue with you, and if you and I were together at sometime in the same room, we'll have to have this conversation, that is the fact that it's wonderful to live at home because I think that that's a great environment. But I must say that I think the most important educational experience your son and your daughter are going to have are those late-night experiences, those conversations in the residence halls, those ability to be able to be challenged and challenge others. Education is not simply about 18 hours in the classroom. It's about the other 150 hours that they spend outside the classroom. And in today's world, I think in many ways that's going to be the most important thing that we give to our children.
Which makes me wonder about the regional campuses. More and more students right. start to attend those. I know Newark has a great situation, and I talked to a lot of people who are very happy and have had very happy experiences out there because of the dorms. But there aren't enough slots anymore. And what are you doing to maybe create that collegial experience?
One of the things we need to do is we need to build more residence halls there too. I mean, this is not if my theory is right, which I've expounded on this program and did at the beginning, and that is that we're one university. Then we've got to work very hard to provide one university experience. And I'm a great believer in residence halls and in our ability to be able to have residential experiences on our smaller campuses too. Very often our smaller campuses, and then it comes back to the complex questions you asked earlier, and that is, what about the 30-something, the 40-something, the person who wants to come back into the educational arena? That's not what they're not going to want to live with a bunch of freshmen. So we have to have multi-layered approach. But clearly, That's what we need to be thinking about. So it need, and so so as the complexity of the university increases, we've got to have answers to all those complexities.
Tracy, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a great day, Tracy. Thank you very much.
From Amber on Facebook asks, how does the state's fee reimbursement for in-state students affect whether they can go to the main campus or branch campus?
I don't know.
I don't either. It is less expensive.
Hey, listen, I have no idea. There's probably something that I should know. I can get an answer, and if Tracy wants to...
Amber, yeah.
Or Amber, I'm sorry, Tracy, we just hung up on... Yeah. We didn't hung up on...
We
said goodbye. Mm-hmm. But Amber, if you want to email me... It's gi.2@osu.edu. So
is that numeral 2?
Numeral
2. gi.numeral2@osu.edu. Okay, Amber.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Email that to President Guy. Real quick, the parking transition from university operated to
university operated.
Well, a lot of the same people still operate I know you're satisfied with the money and the $500 million, the ratings from the bond agencies and so forth. What about the service? You've gotten complaints.
We had complaints before we did it. We had complaints afterwards. The answer is that, and Bill Lode, who's the chairman of our board, who ran COTA, all indications are is that and they're investing heavily in our parking, doing the kinds of things that they said they were going to do. All indication is of the fact that it's going very well. Now, when there are glitches, we will correct them. But overall, the transition has gone very well. And as I say, many of the same people who are running parking now just run it, but they work for the parking company rather than for the university. We gained resources, and I think we also gained quality in the long term.
Well, I didn't get to all my questions.
Oh.
So we'll
that means I have to come back.
You get back here right away.
Okay,
and,
great.
And thank you so much for joining us today. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to everyone. Love having this great station here.
It's Gordon Guy. He's president of Ohio State University. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.